Taking a look now at identifying and controlling invasive plants. And we've got a couple of experts to visit with you on this, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along today. By the way, we're not going to talk about turf grass or weeds and those kinds of pests with you today. Instead, we're going to zero in on some others with Kelly Kearns. Kelly's Invasive Plant Program Manager with the Endangered Resources Program and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Kelly, good to see your smiling face again.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for coming by. And Jerry Dahl. Jerry's an emeritus weed scientist in the agronomy department at UW-Madison. He's current president of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, better known as IPAW, isn't it, Jerry?
That's correct, Larry.
It's great to have you back. It's good
nice
to see you
to
again.
Here,
yeah, we haven't crossed paths for a while, so it's great to have you here. Certainly, again, if you have questions as we move along, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And, Jerry, let me start out with you first. Let's talk about invasive plant basics first. What are they? Why are they a problem?
Well, Larry, most people consider anything that's not native to our area and doesn't stay put where we wanted it to stay is an invader. And we've certainly had those from the time the early settlers arrived, so it's certainly not a new phenomenon. In my career at DW, I was a weed scientist within the agronomy department, and yep. Farmers tend not to call weeds invasive. They're just there, and you deal with them.
Yep.
But those of us that work with natural areas, forests, roadsides, prairies, obviously we have a niche of native plants that we would like to see predominate, and things that encroach upon that, and certainly those that threaten the survival and sustainability of native plants are generally what we would consider invasive plants. And before I came, Wisconsin had a noxious weed law that identified three species as noxious, but that came from the ag community or the ag setting. And those were Canada thistle, leafy spurge, and field bindweed. And they're still out there, so the law didn't make them go away, or it wasn't designed that mm-hmm. necessarily to eradicate it, even though that word was used in the legislation. And more recently, we have a newer rule that is more relevant to today and more practical to try and implement and prevent the real invasive weeds from taking over more territory.
And Kelly, you work with some of those weeds, don't you?
I do. And so that new rule that Jerry mentioned is called NR40. It's a Natural Resources Administrative Rule, and it's been in place for about a year and a half now. And it lists all types of taxa, insects, plant diseases, vertebrates, things like and plants, as either prohibited or restricted. And the prohibited are those that are not yet in the state or only in a few areas, and we really want to be keeping them out no matter what. Right. Things like emerald ash borer, for example, is a prohibited species, and kudzu, things that were not yet in the state, and we really want to get rid of them. So wherever those are found, we want people to let us know, and we'll work with folks to try to get rid of those. And then the restricted species are the ones that are already widespread, and we know that we're not realistically going to eradicate or completely remove those, but we want to minimize their further spread. And so you're not allowed to be selling them, planting them, things like that anymore.
Yeah, well, that's good. And there are some that used to be sold that aren't sold.
Exactly,
anymore.
Right. That's what both anything on the prohibited or restricted list would no longer be allowed to be sold.
What's the best way to identify invasive plants?
Well, there's a lot of resources online. We have at the DNR's website, which is dnr.wi.gov. You can just type in invasives and you'll get to see. We have a whole photo gallery of different invasive species there. We have lots of other handouts available, and we have a field guide, for example, that has photographs of all of our plants that people can order and get a copy of. And there's lots and lots of folks that know these species. And so at the local level, if somebody finds something and they can't tell what it is, you can take it frequently to your local state park, to the local extension office. And if they can't figure it out what it is, then they can send it to someone who can.
I really like that field guide as well. I've seen it before. It's small. It's easy to handle. You can take it with you as you walk around. You can stick it. It's about the size of a billfold or maybe just slightly larger. but with some really good photos in there.
Right. And that's helped a lot of people to be able to identify some of these species and also, you know, what they can do to control them. And is it new in my part of the state or not?
And Jerry, with the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, that's celebrating its 10th anniversary, isn't it?
That's correct.
Before we take calls here, what's its mission and what has it accomplished in its first decade?
Well, we could fill the rest of the hour, the time available, answering that. But the mission is mostly to bring together people of like mind who are concerned about invasive plants and carry out primarily educational programs and help coordinate activities as best we can. We're a nonprofit, of course. We only have 150 to 180 members at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a huge budget. So we try and facilitate things that educate people, get them on the right track in terms of identification, as Kelly was talking about, or management. And among the more successful things I think that IPAW has done over the 10 years, more effective things, has been to team up with other organizations like Prairie Enthusiast, the Nature Conservancy, the North Central Weed Science Society, which is heavily agronomic and agricultural, to put on symposia and workshops that tackle current issues related to invasive plants. And we had one of those in conjunction with Minnesota last November that drew over 500 people between the two states on invasive plants. And we're teaming up with the North Central Weed Science Society in December of this year in Milwaukee. That's their scheduled meeting location, and both IPAW and the Midwest Invasive Plant Network will join with the North Central group for an invasive session, several sessions during the Wednesday, Thursday of that week.
Perfect. So really good education involved there. Kathleen in Green Bay has a question for the two of you. So let's go to Kathleen, who's been patiently waiting. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My daughter bought a house last year, and she bought it in the winter. And in spring, when she went out in the yard, she was overwhelmed by Japanese knotweed. And I just don't know what to do with it because she has a dog and we're concerned about, you know, pesticides and that. Do you have any good tips?
Okay. Kelly, we have a little headphone problem with her here, so we'll get that fixed in a minute. But Jerry, you got...
If you could repeat the question, Larry, then we can...
It was a knotweed question, and... With her daughter having some knotweed on her property and wanting to deal with it and get rid of it, and so that's the question.
Okay, well, hopefully the plant she's talking about is Japanese knotweed, and Japanese knotweed is a plant that's been around for a long time and has been a highly invasive plant in that it spreads vegetatively. So it spreads by roots, and so if somebody has planted a small plant somewhere, then it eventually grows and grows and grows and keeps growing into a large, large patch. So it can cover even acres. And in urban areas, especially where this has been planted and frequently, it gets on fence lines, and so it's in multiple people's property.
Oh.
And unfortunately, because it's one plant with one shared root system, in order to kill the plant, you have to kill the entire plant. You can't just kill what's on your side of the fence and not your neighbor's side of the fence. And so repeated mowing, a dozen times a year for several years can knock it back. If you keep whacking it back and never let it actually produce a good growth, that's one possibility if she doesn't want to use chemicals. Otherwise, we really don't have much else except for smothering it. And unfortunately, this plant is extremely strong, and it can push through concrete foundations. And so it really is something that even smothering really rarely works. This plant is so invasive in England, a lot of realtors and mortgage companies won't allow you to sell your house, won't give you a mortgage if you have this plant on your property because it's so destructive.
Wow. So there you go. Thank you very much for calling. And are your headphones working?
I think so.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
We're good.
You're good now. Okay, great. Thank you, Kathleen, for calling. Appreciate it. Barbara in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I've been seeing a Denifora, or I believe it's called Ladybells. And I've tried lots of different choices, and some people I know have been using chemicals, and it has just killed their lawn and left that stuff growing, and I've the only solution I've come up with is smothering it. Is there anything else?
We're not familiar with what plant you're talking about. I've never heard either that common name or that scientific name.
It's a plant that grows in the alleys, and when I usually say that, people understand, and it can grow up to 5 feet high, and it has nodding purple bell-like shaped flowers along the top, and it has a spiky top. And when it first starts out, it looks like a violet leaf, sort of rounded, but then it becomes more and more arrow-like as it gets larger. And it has a root like a carrot that goes down about 18 inches.
Okay. I think what you're talking about is creeping bellflower. The Latin name for that is Campanula rapunculoides. And if that's the plant you're talking about, and even if it's not, it probably has a similar type of growth structure. This is a plant that's really common in urban areas, in people's lawns, and it has a tremendous root system, both a big taproot, but it also spreads out laterally. And so it's really hard to get it completely dug up. And so you pretty much just have to either keep pulling and pulling and pulling and digging, or if you do apply an herbicide such as 2,4-D or Roundup, something along those lines, then you can kill it if you do repeated applications of this. But it's probably one that's going to be pretty difficult to get rid of unless you really keep after it several times.
Mm, there you go. Thank you for calling, Barbara. Dan in River Falls, we're on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I've got some buckthorn on a hillside. It's a hillside that I'm concerned about. It's maybe 60 feet by 100 feet, and I'm slowly removing it by cutting and applying Roundup on the stump. And then wondering what I should plant to help with preventing erosion. There is sumac around it, which I'm all right with that taking over, and wondering if that is the best thing to do or if I should be looking at something else.
Well, you're doing the right thing to get rid of the buckthorn, so that's the first step. The other thing is to keep in mind that you're probably going to have buckthorn seedlings coming up for into the future, since you probably had seeds raining down from the adult plants. And so you probably don't want to put in anything that's going to prevent you from controlling those seedlings. So something like grasses, so that you could either mow or burn that hillside, would probably be a helpful thing to do. Or just something that you can minimize. You don't want to put in anything really expensive that you might have to use some kind of control against.
We'll be back with our guests right after a quick look at the news. Stay with us. We're taking a look at invasive plant species on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Jerry Dow, Emeritus Weed Scientist in the Agronomy Department at UW-Madison, current president of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, better known as IPAW, I think. And Kelly Kearns is the Invasive Plant Program Manager with the Endangered Resources Program at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. So great to have both of them with us. And thank you so much for listening in. And if you have a question, join us. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. And Lisa in Janesville has been waiting a little while, guys. So let's go and see what's on Lisa's mind. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an invasive weed. I've never seen it prior to this year. It's taken over the edge of our property. It's a trailing vine, very sticky, and it has, I wouldn't call them berries, but round, green-looking berries that also are somewhat prickly. And in the heat that we had, it just exploded and took off.
Are the leaves heart-shaped?
They're somewhat elongated, thin.
And do they, are they pretty bright green, and the stem itself is green? And does it have little tendrils?
Yes.
Okay. It's probably a smilax. There's a number of species in that group that are the smilax, and they seem to be doing really well the last couple of years. It's a native vine, and so it's not a non-native, so it probably won't become too aggressive long-term. But if you do have a problem with it, then just cut it back. And you could also try pulling it up if you need to. But it probably won't be a big problem. I wouldn't worry about it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Mark in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Well, hi. Thanks for the opportunity, Larry.
Sure.
I'd like to talk about the Phragmites eradication program that's going to be begun in August. They're going to spray 118 miles of coastline with a wide-spectrum defoliant, 3,600 acres. Now, I understand the need to control Phragmites in upland situations and where riparian landowners have trouble with access with their shoreline. But to take out gigantic areas like they're talking about doing it by helicopter with no provision for mitigation, overspray probability, I just can't see the wisdom of what they're doing. And there's no way of redressing it. It didn't have to have an environmental impact statement. There were no public hearings held. What can you say?
Okay, let's turn to Kelly Kearns.
Sure. I'm not real closely familiar with this whole project. It's a big project that they got a grant for, a federal grant, and to do not eradication, but control of Phragmites throughout a number of special concern areas, one of which is up in Door County. And the goal is not eradication, because that would mean to completely get rid of the plant, and they know that that's not going to happen. So the goal is to knock it back enough so that other plants can actually get a foothold in those areas, and it can keep it down so that people can use those areas again, so people can see from their houses down to the lake, so that this plant is contained to some extent. The herbicide that they are most likely using is one called Habitat, and that's a grass-specific herbicide, and so it should not be impacting most of the other plants that are there. And so Jerry might not know more about this herbicide than I do, but for the most part, it's very selective to grasses. And yet I can understand the concerns with helicopter spraying, because certainly it's going to be covering a large area, and this is a fairly new thing to be trying up there, because it's such a huge area that has been infested with the Phragmites, and a lot of landowners there want this control done, and it's the only large-scale way of actually getting that done in a fairly quick time. And I'm not familiar with the lack of public meetings on this. I know that there has been some effort to go out for public awareness, but I'm not sure of the details on that.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, any comment?
Just Kelly suggested maybe I knew something about Habitat. Not very much, but obviously it is approved for use in aquatic areas, which says it had to go through a lot of testing to prove that it's safe to fish, wildlife, and other aquatic species. And yes, it is selective primarily to grass, so cattails, sedges, what if there is anything that could survive under a Phragmites infestation. That's the hope, that would then have a chance to rebound.
And I would say, if you want more information on this, I would contact the DNR office in Green Bay and contact the folks up there, and they'll put you in touch with the people who are in charge, and they'll let you know what kind of public input process there will be. Because I'm sure they'll have some public input process for this.
Mark, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And let's go to another Mark in Mequon. Mark, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, and you may have covered this already because I'm joining late, but I'm looking for ways that I can kill off buckthorn. I have about 20 acres of woods, and it is just infested. And I've tried chopping it out, using Roundup on it, using another chemical similar to Roundup on it, tried burning it, and it comes back. And I'm just looking for some ideas.
Jerry, do you want to chime in?
Well, join the world of battling weeds. I think buckthorn particularly is not one that rolls over and disappears quickly. I'm guessing your use of Roundup was cutting the plant and then painting the cut stem area. Is that how you were doing that?
Yes, exactly. And what happens is that particular plant may die, but then right near it or sprouting from underneath nearby, more come. It's just very difficult to deal with, as you probably know.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have oak, maples, other desired trees overshadowing the buckthorn?
Yes. Okay. It's mainly aspen and oak and ash in the forest, and just trying to take care of it, get it out of there.
Yeah. Well, little by little, as best you can. I think what you're doing is probably the best approach, but the area you have is intimidating,
big,
obviously,
yeah,
to keep doing that by hand. I was asking about other plants because a foliar spray would certainly lighten the burden of trying to treat all of that, but most of the foliar sprays have some volatility that probably would not be good for the maples, the aspens, and the other things. So I think continue with what you're doing. Try and stay at it. Maybe don't tackle the entire area. Work at it on the edges where it's spreading, tending to spread further, and try and gain some headland that way.
And one of the ways that people prioritize when they're dealing with buckthorn is go after the fruit-producing trees first, because mm-hmm. those are the ones that are going to be spreading those seeds out there. And if your area is an area where you could actually do a prescribed fire through there, that's a really good way of keeping down those seedlings and those resprouts. And another thing is that a lot of people have found that Roundup really is not the best chemical for them for buckthorn, but something, a triclopyr, which is actually a brush killer, is actually works a little bit better for a lot of people. So you might want to try using different chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure you're doing it in the fall and the winter rather than doing it in the spring.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. And Sandy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Larry. I am dealing with reed canary grass and neighbors who like it. We live on the parkway in Madison along the Yahara River, and we've been fighting this and dealing with it somewhat successfully for the last few years by covering it with black plastic and erosion control cloth, and then once it's, after a couple of years, digging holes in the plastic and planting some forbs and sedges and grasses that could compete with it. And that seems to be working on the areas that we tried that, and we're continuing to try to work on the others. The neighbors don't want to look at black plastic. They would rather see the grass because it's more beautiful. How do you explain in a way that the people who want the look of it and don't want to deal with the interim, you know, they don't want to look at it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So how is there another way of doing this that would work? This stuff is so tough.
It's a tough one, yeah. Well, reed canary grass is an interesting plant because it actually works really well for holding the soil on shores. And because it's so abundant in the landscape that those seeds and root parts are going to get into shorelines because they're floating around in the water and they get pushed around. And so you'll keep getting reinfestations of this if you aren't on top of it. And so It will always be there, and just to some level, and there'll always be new plants coming up. So, part of the problem with reed canary is that it doesn't let anything else grow around it, and it doesn't allow wildlife to use it. And so, by pointing out to your neighbors that they're not having any flowers in that area, and that it's all they're seeing is just this one grass that's not that pretty when it's not blooming. It's really kind of a boring grass, and that they're not getting wildlife that's using it. And trying to explain the difference between what's using maybe your area that's a little more diverse and what's using the area that's just the reed canary grass, that might help. But it's always tough. If there's people there's always going to be people who really don't see the problems with the invasives. So not a lot more I can advise you on that one.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have an email from Rich in Hudson. We have a lot of honeysuckle growing in western Wisconsin. What's the best way to identify native versus invasive honeysuckle?
Well, we don't have any large, bushy honeysuckles that are native. So all of the large shrub honeysuckles are all non-native. The ones that have been around in Wisconsin for a while, there's three different species which hybridize, and so they all look fairly similar. They're considered the Eurasian bush honeysuckles. We have a new one that's just starting to move into Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin primarily, although I just saw it in central Wisconsin yesterday, called Amur honeysuckle. And that one's got longer pointed, shinier leaves, whereas the more common European bush honeysuckles have very kind of oval leaves that are dull and slightly hairy. And they all have those typical honeysuckle flowers that come out early in the spring. Or in the spring. They smell real strong, and then they die back, and then they produce a kind of a clear red, orange, or yellow berry. So all the bush honeysuckles have that. The native honeysuckles are all either very low-growing shrubs or vines, and you're not going to get them mixed up with the European ones.
An email from Miranda in Madison. We recently purchased a place that has goatweed, bishop's weed infestations around the house. Previous owners have used landscape cloth a couple of times to cover it, but what I found was layers of landscape cloth with dense mats of rhizomes underneath. Would a different type of smothering method work, perhaps earlier in the spring or late fall? Are there other options that are available?
Yeah, she's talking about bishop's goutweed, and this is a very persistent plant that was popular to plant years ago, and it's still hanging around in lots and lots of people's yards, unfortunately, and very difficult to get rid of. Digging out requires that you really very carefully get rid of all the roots, and so that's one possibility. A smothering, I wouldn't use something like landscape cloth that light and water can get through. I would use black plastic and weight it down with bricks, rocks, whatever, and keep that plastic down for at least a full growing season, and probably more like two, because otherwise that plant will come back. And if you allow any cracks in the plastic, it'll pop right through.
Okay. Email from Jeff in Mindoro. Due to a recent road project on my road here in La Crosse County, the township has actually planted the invasive daylily. I saw them doing it early one morning. They've been having trouble keeping a steep bank stable. This is adjacent to my native prairie planting on CRP property. I work very hard on keeping the nasties out of it. Can I do anything about it?
Boy, if it's already planted, there's not a lot you can do about it. I think in the future, trying to contact the county ahead of time and making sure they're aware that this is probably not a good plant to plant there would be a good start. Since the daylilies only spread vegetatively, they spread by roots, then if he could create some kind of a barrier in the ground, like put some kind of metal flashing or even those plastic border things that you can buy at hardware stores between his property and that area to keep the daylilies from actually moving across into his property.
Let's turn to Jackie in Milwaukee. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, and glad you had a good time, Larry. My problem is one of disposal. I have a small lot on the northwest side of Milwaukee, and a man came and did work for me and told me that something that had yellow on top was garlic mustard. He dug that out and then looked into the neighbor's yard on the other side of the fence. I got permission from the neighbor, and he went over, and he got two large garbage bags full of it. Now, how do you dispose of it? You can't put it, as I understand, into composting. And if you take it out to the regular, the place where you take leaves and...
Sure.
What do you do with it? How do you get rid of it? How do you dispose of it?
Well, if you do have garlic mustard, then disposal is a little bit easier. But what you described, if it had yellow flowers, it was not garlic mustard. Garlic mustard has white flowers. But all of the species that are now on the NR40 restricted or prohibited list, if you have gathered them and put them and bagged them up, you can send them to a landfill. Generally, the law is that yard waste cannot go to landfills. They have to go to compost facilities, or you have to compost it on your own property. And but we do have this law now that allows that to be done, so that species like garlic mustard don't go into the landfills and spread the seeds through into the compost facilities and spread the seeds that way. Well, still, a lot of things like buckthorn, which are large, brushy things, we really don't have a good disposal opportunity for them yet. Once we have more biofuel facilities where we can send wood chip things, then we'll be able to get rid of them safely. But composting, if you can do it on your own property, is probably a good way to do it. But and maybe remove the seed heads and put them in the garbage.
You're telling me that if it's not white, it isn't garlic mustard?
That's correct.
oh boy, he might have made a mistake. However, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Aaron in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Aaron. Aaron? We lost Aaron. All right. Well, let's go to Eric in Door County. Hi, Eric.
Hello?
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Excellent topic. Great program. I actually work in Door County at one of the state parks up here. And my question was, we're trying to control invasives at the park, and I think the Friends group is doing a great job at it. But my question, I guess, is about the Japanese barberry. And is it still being sold at landscape centers? Is there any push or movement to try to get landscapers to stop selling it?
Yeah, Japanese barberry is not yet on the NR40 restricted species list. When we first did that law, we didn't want to have to deal with the species that were more controversial, you know, the ones that are actually being sold by people on a regular basis, and Japanese barberry is certainly one of those. And so it is still legal to sell, even though we know that it can be invasive in some areas. It will be one of many species that will be assessed in the next round of going through the NR40 rule revision process, which we haven't officially started yet, but will be in the future. And so that is one that is legal now, although it is invasive. And we recommend people controlling it where possible.
Okay.
Is there actually a Japanese barberry plant that doesn't produce seeds, like a hybridized plant? That's
one of the reasons why we didn't address Japanese barberry the first time around, is because there's research that's been ongoing about the many, many cultivars. And there's a number of places in the country where they're doing that kind of research to find out which species actually do produce seed and which ones don't. And we're gathering that information right now. But yes, there are cultivars that definitely produce much less seed and may not be invasive.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling. And Dave in Madison, your turn next. Let's see. I'm going to get Dave on. There we go. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. I'm calling from the other perspective on the reed canary grass on the Yahara River.
Okay.
And my thought is that, yes, if you remove it and then put the plastic and erosion control cloth down, that's one thing. But just ripping it out and doing nothing, then the soil erodes, and also there's no environmental services on the other spectrum, looking at carbon sequestration and nitrate and phosphorus removal from the water, which reed canary grass is very good for.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Yeah, mm-hmm. We agree with you on there.
Yep. So that's something, if you're going to remove it, you need to follow the proper procedures to ensure that you don't have those kinds of problems coming up. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that call. We have a decade of stewardship. We're going to be celebrating. Jerry, maybe you could talk a little bit about that again.
Okay. Larry's referring to the 10th anniversary of IPAW. The organization was born in Eau Claire at a large gathering of folks concerned about invasives back in 2001. And this coming Saturday, June 18th, we're going to gather just west of Cross Plains at a property called the Swamp Lovers to have a birthday party of sorts. We're going to start the day with some educational opportunities, tours that will include managing invasive plants with mechanical and chemical approaches. We'll talk about invasive species mapping, and we're going to have some biological control alternatives there, including four-legged critters called goats that are being used to control or help manage at least some brush infestations. And we're going to use that event to honor the Invader Crusader Award winners for 2011. The Invasive Council, the Council of Invasive Species, coordinates and sponsors the Invasive Species Awareness Month, and the Invader Crusader Award process is part of all of the ISAM activities. And Kelly perhaps wants to comment on who some of the recipients this year are.
Sure. Well, we have a number of different recipients, including the director of the Nursery Association. We have nonprofit with the Golden Sands RC&D. We have Jerry's, the person who stepped into his position as the weed scientist at UW-Madison, Mark Renz, who does a lot of research and education on invasive plants. Milwaukee County Parks is getting it for the tremendous work they've been doing down there in probably one of the most infested areas of the state. We have a cooperative weed management area that's also doing it up in the Wild Rivers area in the northeast part of the state, as well as a number of individuals that have also winning it as well.
Super. So it sounds like a fun time, and I want to thank you both for coming by and talking with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do this again.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Larry.
Jerry Dahl is Emeritus Weed Scientist and current president of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, or IPAW. Kelly Kearns, Invasive Plant Program Manager with the Endangered Resources Program in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We'll have them back. Grilling Buddies, Mad Dog and Merrill join us tomorrow. And Joe Rhodes talks Apple computers. Stay with us.